Thank you so much for having me. I'm Chief Meteorologist Amber Sellens from ABC 15 in Phoenix, and going to talk a little bit today about how I address climate change on TV and through social media. So let's get started. Just a little bit about me. Again, I am the Chief Meteorologist at KNXV, which is ABC 15 in Phoenix, Arizona. I've been chief there since 2011, at the station since 2009, and prior to that worked as a meteorologist in El Paso, Texas. I am a graduate of the University of Arizona. I have my bachelor's degree in atmospheric science there with minors in mathematics and journalism, and have really been focusing on forecasting the weather in the desert Southwest, but just in the last maybe 5 to 8 years, transitioning that to talking more about climate in my day-to-day job on the air, online, on social media. And one of the things that I really want to bring home now as I focus on communication through those outlets is just trying to make things as simple as possible for people. And one of the ways that I've been doing that is working with Climate Central and the George Mason Center for Climate Change Communication to present climate change information in a way that is easily digestible in very quick little nuggets, little bites on my evening newscast. And again, keeping it simple is absolutely key here, especially when you talk about television and how we present weather and climate. And so I think about these things, I simplify as much as I can. I love that saying, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. And this is just so important because whether we realize it or not, most people in most situations are going to naturally simplify complex information just in order for their brains to process it. So if we don't help make those simplifications for them in appropriate ways, then they will make their own simplifications that may or may not be accurate pertaining to the information that we're trying to give them. So one risk communication expert put it this way, people simplify. It's our job as risk and science communicators to help people simplify appropriately. So one of the things that we have done is really try to address how climate change is affecting our viewers. And this has been a shift over the last decade or so. And in some respects, it's been kind of a hard shift because scientists really care about the data. They care about numbers. They like to see the graphs. They like to see where the trends are going. And we really care about those scientific answers, but most of our viewers do not. They have little to no science education at past high school. They don't want those scientific answers. A lot of times they can't understand them. They want human answers to these questions. What does all that data mean? What are the options for dealing with it? What changes are already happening, particularly where they live, and how will it affect their day-to-day life? So probably the big three I would say that I talk about here in Phoenix, Arizona are drought, heat, and wildfires, because those three aspects of climate and how they are changing affect my viewers every day. So you won't see me talking a lot about sea ice or things that are happening far away because I'm really trying to drive it home to the people that live here. They want to know how it's going to affect the lives of their children and their family. And how will it affect my finances? This is key. And it's so key that our viewers, our television viewers have said time and time again that that's one of the main things that they think about on their day-to-day life, and they're looking for ways to save money. So, we have a segment at ABC 15 called Smart Shopper where all we do is find deals for people and tell them about it. So, in kind of sticking with that and knowing that it's important for my viewers, I've tried to talk about how climate change could affect their finances to kind of bring that point home. And then how will it affect the things that I enjoy? So for example, how will it affect outdoor activities? Will they be able to go to the park with their families in May still? Or are we talking like 110 at that point and they're not going to be able to go outside and enjoy things? Also skiing. Skiing's huge here in Arizona. It's not all desert. We have a high country. Flagstaff is about 7,000 feet in elevation, and there's this huge ski industry up there. Another thing that we talked about on the air was chocolate. Everybody loves chocolate, right? Well, this is one of the releases that Climate Central did on Valentine's Day, connecting climate change to chocolate production and how that could change in the future. And so just to give you a little bit of a background, Climate Central provides graphics to meteorologists all across the country. They are a nonprofit NSF-funded program. That's National Science Foundation. Gave them a grant to operate, and so they are just strictly in charge of communicating climate change and helping meteorologists through this program called Climate Matters communicate climate change easily to their viewers as well. There was a poll done years ago about what meteorologists really needed. Why weren't they talking about climate change on the air? What needed to happen in order for them to do that? And really, one of the number one things was time. So in our day-to-day, work, we typically have very little time to work on anything in depth. For example, my schedule, I come in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. First show I do starts at 4. I have 2 hours to look at all the models, make my forecast, input the data, update our website, meet with producers, meet with promotions producers to help kind of craft the story and how we're going to cover it. So again, time was a huge concern for me and for other meteorologists across the country. So climate change has helped kind of bridge that gap a little bit to help us better talk about these things easily in our day-to-day work life. So I want to show you this one. Again, this is how Climate Matters handled the climate change effects on chocolate and how I covered it on our newscast.
So cool. Well, chocolate and champagne, two of our favorite Valentine's Day things, but the future of these two great loves may be in trouble. Rising temperatures, changing rainfall patterns, they're already affecting the areas that they grow in, and it's projected to get worse. In fact, most cacao grown in West Africa, right now about 70% of it's grown there, and 40% of that area may be unsuitable for it within the next 30 years. Of course, that could wreak havoc on our chocolate supplies across the world, even right here in our state. And as for our bubbly, warmer temperatures in the Champagne region of France would spoil the grape harvest there and force vineyards to move farther north into completely different climate zones.
Seems like
so quick and simple, right? I mean, that clip was only 40 seconds long, and that's typically a longer one. A lot of times I have 30 or even 20 seconds to kind of get these complex topics in and simplify them appropriately to get that story home and bring it home to my viewers. The other thing, this one went over very well, not just here, but a meteorologist across the rest of the country that happened to use this Climate Matters release got really great feedback as well. People care about their beer.
All right, doesn't really take a genius to figure out it is getting hotter outside. But Amber, that heat over time I'm hearing could actually affect how people enjoy a cold beer.
Yeah,
and it's because of climate change. It's already happening. It's affecting ingredients in beer like barley, hops, and water. And according to the USDA, over 70% of our hops is grown in Washington. A warming climate means less snowpack available up there to irrigate those crops. So what do farmers do instead? They use groundwater, and that has more minerals in it. So apparently, that's not what you want to have a good taste beer. Now, several breweries are now taking action to fight climate change. They're vowing to use renewable energy and capture methane from wastewater treatment.
So that was a really complex release, actually. And I went through probably, I would say, 3 or 4 edits to try to trim that down into a shorter version of handling that. And we also took it to social media, posted it on my Facebook page. Of course, the reach has grown quite a bit since I captured that screenshot. But at that point, it reached over 22,000 people. And, you know, it's very important to think about the fact that social media has basically completely changed the way our society gets news and information. And there is a whole subset of our population, mainly millennials, who will either turn to it first as opposed to TV, radio, or newspapers, or you use it exclusively to get news. So it's really important that we reach out on those platforms as well. And, you know, one of the things that has kind of taken a little bit of time for me and others to learn and try to navigate is how to get it seen on Facebook, because Facebook is not like Twitter where it just comes in chronological order of when it was tweeted out. You see everything and it just boom, 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 boom down the line. Facebook rather has complex algorithms that determine who sees what in their newsfeed. So it's been a real challenge, especially when it comes to how meteorologists get weather alerts out there. Facebook has not been a good platform for us to do that because a lot of times people won't see it in their newsfeed until the alert has already expired. Well, kind of the same thing when you're talking about posting other content on there as well. You have to craft it in a way that tries to capture people's attention so that it can gain traction. Otherwise, it's going to get buried in people's feeds. They may or may not see it. And we got to just think creatively on how to do that. So interesting content, catchy headlines, short videos, good pictures, as opposed to just words. Those have worked better for me. And if it's lame, again, Facebook is going to make sure it doesn't show up in people's news feeds. So there have actually been posts that I've done where I've kind of watched how it's played out over the course of an hour or two. And if it didn't gain enough traction, I deleted it, I reworked it, I presented the same information in a different, catchier way, and reposted that, and it's worked better for me. So it's been kind of a learning process. But this one did really well. I can hear it now, people saying, no way, not my beer, now I care about climate change. And it's true. I mean, that really got people to perk their ears up and listen to what we had to say that day. I also want to show you this video clip. It doesn't contain a release from Climate Central. So again, we talk about these things on the air with or without the help of the Climate Matters material now. And this was actually a story that caught my attention because it was research being done by a professor right here in Arizona at the University of Arizona. So here is that.
We know climate change could affect everything about the way we live in the future, from agriculture and tourism to productivity and local business. But at what cost? It's a question being studied right now at the University of Arizona. Economist Derek Lemoyne developed a model to help countries determine how expensive climate change will be for them.
We're finding that in many parts of the world, the weather will become more variable, and that will then act to make GDP more variable. So we'll bounce around more from year to year.
The research also shows that richer countries will be much less exposed to the cost of climate change than poorer ones.
All right. So, you know, a lot of people have asked me when I cover this on TV, when I talk about it on social media, how do I handle it? Because there are a lot of naysayers out there, a lot of people who think that global warming is not happening. And so this has been a real challenge for meteorologists and scientists in general across the country. One of the things that really caught my attention, it was last year in February, there was a science diplomacy summit at the University of Arizona, and Diana Liverman presented, and she said this: I don't think any other country has the problems of science communication and public perception that the United States has. And I would have to wholeheartedly agree. You do not see issues like we deal with here in the U.S. happening in Europe or other countries. They know that climate change is happening. A lot of especially coastal nations know the effects. They feel that they feel them. They deal with them day to day. They're seeing it. And you know, for some of us in the United States, it's out of sight, out of mind. And so my goal here is to try to keep it at the forefront, keep it in the conversation. And in doing that, I've gotten a lot of positive feedback. A lot of people saying, thank you so much. Thank you for addressing this. Thank you for explaining it to me so I can better understand. There are people that are still choosing to pick fights on social media, I would say. I just wanted to share this one example. Common feedback I get is that people are not believing in it because of Al Gore. So this is just an example of one of the comments, and I'll share my response in just a bit as well. This Facebook user said, the one thing that has made me question climate change is Al Gore. When he stated that the core of the earth was millions of degrees, that was ridiculous. And if Gore doesn't know that the core of the earth is not millions of degrees, he lost credibility with me. My 12-year-old daughter knows the earth's core isn't that hot, but the man championing the cause of global warming does not. That is a concern. So how do you respond to that? Well, this is how I did. I said, don't base your climate change knowledge on what politicians say. ask a scientist or take a look at the science yourself. Here are a few great sites to get you going. And these are the three that I always share with people. Skepticalscience.com, which if you're not familiar with it, takes basically every skeptic argument and breaks it down and, you know, says, this is true, this is not true, this is a half truth, here's what we know, here's the science. And it's a really good tool for those of you that are having conversations with your friends or family or anybody in public that may be denying what's happening. Go over this and familiarize yourself with some of these arguments and the fallacies in them, what's wrong with them so that you can respond. ClimateCentral.org has a lot of great resources, and then climate.nasa.gov. So I give them those three. And I will also say this, I really try to make myself available because for a lot of people, I'm the only scientist they're ever going to see or meet. A lot of people in my community just don't have access to scientists. And so that's a real problem as well. They can't get their questions answered if they don't have someone who's an expert to help guide them in the right direction and give them those answers. So I always try to make myself available and answer their questions. If they email me, if they send me a message on Facebook, or even just call me up on the phone. And so that's really important for me. The other thing that really kind of got my head spinning as I started to dive deep into this and got a lot of these comments back that were based off of Al Gore was just an interesting realization and just a thought that, I don't know, hindsight is 20/20, but it just crossed my mind. Would we be in this same situation if climate change and climate science was presented to the American public by somebody who wasn't a politician? If it was somebody else who, as my viewer said, championed the cause of global warming first, would we still be in this position? Because I just feel like it's really interesting how it all played out. Just because of Al Gore's political affiliation, half of the American people tuned out and don't believe and don't care. And so it's been a real challenge trying to bring them back and listen to the science and open their eyes to what's happening around them. So here's my mantra when it comes to addressing climate change. And I do try to do this in my Facebook responses as well as my email responses. And this kind of came about a couple of years ago. Bud Ward with Yale Climate Communications sent an email out to a handful of us who work in a climate communication and said, what's going to be your New Year's resolution when it comes to climate change? And at first, I didn't know how to respond. I thought about it, and I wasn't coming up with anything good. But as I'm thinking, I kept walking by this same plaque in my hallway that I have in my house here. And this is what the plaque says. Be kind, love others, be grateful, speak truth, show grace, and work hard. And I thought, you know, that's perfect. That is absolutely perfect when we're talking about climate change. Be kind to those that attack me. When I'm trying to share climate information, respond to them out of love, be grateful for how far we've come and, you know, all the opportunities that we've been given to address this and try to find solutions. Speak truth when it comes to climate change and its effects. Show grace in all circumstances, when it's tough and, you know, when you feel like you're in the trenches and it's a battle. Show grace to everyone around you and just work hard on it and stay the course. So those are the things that I remember and are on the forefront of my brain every single time I'm having these conversations with people. And you know, it's just so important for us to try to influence change and bridge the gap between us and them, right? There's no us and them. We're all people. We're all working through this together. So bridge that gap. And then I'll leave you with one final thought. The past is your lesson. The present is your gift. And the future is your motivation. And the future for my community here in Phoenix, as we deal with an increase of 110 plus days, hotter overnights, bigger drought and drought impacts, and increase wildfires and their destruction, my motivation is to try to find solutions for that in the future to make sure that this place that I love is sustainable for my kids to live in and my grandkids to live in. And so again, that's just the thought I want to leave you with. Think about that as you're moving forward and reaching out to those in your community, trying to educate them and find solutions for our adaptability and sustainability in the future. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Amber. And one question we did have that came up, if you would just address that real quick, is for our local volunteers, what do you think is like the best way for them to approach their local meteorologist, and how would you see them doing that in an effective way?
I would say the first thing you can probably do is reach out to them. A lot of station websites have their contact information on there, email address, or phone number. You can also look for them on their social media pages, and just reach out and say, hey, are you familiar with Climate Central? And they provide free resources for you to talk about climate. So I would present them with resources, and definitely don't write them and say, how come you're not doing this? How come you haven't talked about this? Like, don't do it in an attacking way. Just say, hey, you know, it's really interesting that there are other meteorologists across the country that are using this free resource. And, you know, all you have to do is send Climate Central an email and say, hey, sign me up. And I would present it that way as a positive. Here's what is out there to help you with your job, as opposed to the negative. Why aren't you talking about this?